Hello there.
You've discovered TalkZone.com, the best in internet talk radio. Now, more of the Traveling On Radio Show on TalkZone.com.
And welcome back to the Traveling On Radio Show, everybody, with Tanya and Ian Fitzpatrick. And just to let you know, Marcia will be posting an article on our blog, which will have links and more information about the two exhibits that are coming to the National Gallery of Art. But if you've been keeping up with Traveling On News, you'll also know that the Duke Ellington Jazz Festival starts this weekend, and each year as part of its mission, the Jazz Fest honors jazz greats for their lifetime contributions to jazz and humanity. And this year's award recipient is our next guest, pianist, composer, and educator Ellis Marsalis, and he will be honored on June 15th at a concert featuring Ellis and his sons and even his honorary son, Harry Connick Jr., at the Kennedy Center. And we are very happy to welcome him to the Traveling On Radio Show. Ellis, welcome.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Well, it's our...
We're happy to have you.
Yeah, truly our pleasure. And congratulations on being awarded the Duke Ellington Lifetime Achievement Award. And, you know, many consider you to be the Duke Ellington of New Orleans. What does this award mean to you?
Well, it doesn't qualify me to be the Duke Ellington of it. That's for sure. There's a great deal of appreciation getting any kind of a lifetime achievement award, especially before it's posthumous. And also to be able to play with our sons, that too is a pleasure. And being in Washington, which is also a pleasure, because that's one of my favorite cities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had, we spent 3 years when I was on the faculty at Virginia Commonwealth in Richmond. So we spent a lot of time in Washington, D.C. with the younger kids at that time, which was in the 80s. And there's a space, I don't think it's there anymore, a club that I used to play. I don't mean Blues Alley. I played there also. But it was another space, a smaller club. And it's been a very pleasant city. I was on the National Endowment for the Arts and Jazz panel reading grants for 4 years. You know, so, I have a great deal of affinity for Washington, D.C.
Now, as Tanya mentioned, you will be performing at the Kennedy Center on June 15th, and you're going to be there with your sons as well performing. What is this going to be like for you?
Well, it's always a pleasure. It doesn't happen that often. The last time was in 2001. We had a small tour, mostly in Canada. But it's always a pleasure to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Of all of the boys, our youngest spent a lot of time with me because he was the youngest, and he sort of grew up playing in a trio that I had. And it was a little different with the older boys. I mean, they left pretty much out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so... We made a couple of CDs together.
But
we didn't really spend a lot of time actually on the bandstand performing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this will certainly be special. You know, we were in New Orleans a few weeks ago for the French Quarter Festival, and we had Charmaine Neville on our show, and I asked her, I said, you know, you grew up in a musical legacy family. What was it like growing up in Neville? I mean, did you have the choice to become a veterinarian ballerina, as some little girls, you know, like to combine professions, you know, what was it? What did your sons have Was there, I mean, did they all want to grow up and kind of follow in your footsteps? Because you've created such a beautiful legacy of music here for us and certainly within your family.
Well, I don't know that they really wanted to do that because as they were growing up, jazz music was not their favorite music.
I'm sure that would shock many today.
Well, mostly because people don't really know teenagers. I mean, you should read about jazz musicians. And not only that, you know, lots of people who are now playing in symphony orchestras started out in garage bands.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so it's sort of like the American way. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a point in time in which you have to become serious if about certain aspects of what it is that you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And like there's nothing wrong with staying in pop music if you can figure out how to do that. You know, because there's a level of seriousness even in that, because everybody who starts out in pop music does not end up to be a Bruce Springsteen or James Taylor. You know, it doesn't happen like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that I think they were able to benefit from was that we made sure in the early years that they had good quality instruction on their instruments. And I think there's lots of people who I've had a chance to talk to some adults who shared their experiences as young people and how they didn't really get a chance to study seriously on their instruments. For whatever combination of circumstance, and it can make a difference.
Absolutely, I as a former classical musician, and you know that when I was growing up, and you know, mind you, I'm only 28, and that's what I'm sticking with. But when I was growing up, you know, music and the arts were very important. They're a very important part of our curriculum. And these days, you know, arts aren't considered a priority in educational systems, and people really don't have, there's not that appreciation today as there was when I was growing up, and just the importance of the arts and reading and the theater and, you know, music certainly. And, you know, speaking of that, jazz is a very important part of our culture. Talk a little bit about the importance of jazz to America.
Well, the music is indigenous to the culture overall. The process for the creation of the music is rooted in a democratic process. Sometimes people refer to it as organized chaos, but it really isn't. It sort of seems that way because when people see jazz musicians performing, most times they don't see them reading music, which creates the illusion that either they don't know how or that it's just luck. You see, but for the most part, I don't think that the music is appreciated enough in the democratic process because it is not indigenous to curriculums, especially K through 12. I mean, there's some jazz studies programs and higher education here and there, but to actually have jazz studies in your earlier grades can make a difference in not only the attitude, but also how it is that young musically inclined students function.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ellis, we have been so fortunate to have Ben Jaffe of Preservation Hall with us and Irvin Mayfield as well, the cultural ambassador to New Orleans. And you're going to be performing with Harry Connick here in Washington, another one of those sons of New Orleans, as well as your own children. It's there's just something amazing about New Orleans and just the talent that it continues to produce in jazz music. And what I like about all of the people that we have been so fortunate to have on our show is just their commitment to the yard and to the preservation and the promulgation of jazz to the next generation. And I think you as an educator are certainly part of that very important legacy. And I just want you to talk to us a little bit about what you kind of see happening with jazz education and just how New Orleans itself can be such an instrumental part of helping younger generations appreciate this pure American music form.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm up and down as far as being optimistic and pessimistic.
Uh-huh.
When you see the way that the federal government treated us when Katrina came, I mean, it's basically the same way that the federal government has been treating us generally. So I'm hoping that that aspect manages to change for the good, for the better. And there's an old saying, sometimes when you're at the bottom of the barrel, all it wears up. I don't know that we're really at the bottom of the barrel, but we're not exactly where we need to be in terms of jazz music being exposed to the nation as a whole.
Well, you know, I know you're doing your part, though, you know, particularly in New Orleans with your, who you call your honorary son, Harry Connick Jr. You guys have helped build Musicians Village for the purpose of trying to encourage musicians to come back to the city. Talk a little bit about the successes and just the work behind Musicians Village in New Orleans.
Well, the Musicians Village was not really a part of getting musicians to come back. Most of the musicians have never really gone anywhere. They may have had problems, like a lot of other people had problems with their residence in terms of storm related or whatever. But for the most part, like, for example, our youngest son, when Katrina hit, he was on an airplane coming from Japan. What the Musicians Village represents is an opportunity to give musicians a chance to own a home.
Right.
But a lot of people don't understand it's not some kind of a giveaway program. I mean, there are specific things that anybody who would get one of those homes would have to do, and which involves some very mainstream activities like get their credit in line and be able to assume a monthly note, you know, things of that nature. It's a opportunity with Habitat for Humanity to build some houses that's earmarked, if you will.
Right. So you encourage responsibility and is you know in line with support of the city. And I tell you, Ian and I, New Orleans is our second home. We love the city. We love the people of New Orleans. The music we never grow tired of. And certainly we're here as arts advocates. I don't think we're supposed to be journal or advocates as journalists, but we're lawyers first. So we're taught to advocate. but Ellis, I appreciate so much you coming on the show today. And I know you're going to be, we'll see you on June 15th at the Kennedy. At the Kennedy Center. And also I promised a friend of mine, Andrea Rohn, who is a WUSA anchor, our local CBS affiliate, that to say hello to you. And apparently she was the conservatory's first administrator principal when the music school was on the campus of University of New Orleans. And her first interaction with you, you accidentally took away her picked up her master's thesis.
Yeah.
She graduated and.
Yeah. And she's been a local treasure here ever since.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And I also want to tell you, you know, I know you're good people because you share the same birthday as my dad, November 13th. So,
I look. 14th.
Well, it's wrong on your bio on online, but you guys are close enough. So, but thank you so much for coming on today, my dear. And we will see you June 15th at the Kennedy Center. Alice Marsalis, everybody. Oh, you're welcome. And we will see you guys on the other side of this break. We got a couple more surprises for you in store.
That's right. We're going to continue this look at the DC art scene.
Looking for the latest travel book, the hottest item in travel gear and clothing? Or are you researching a destination or looking into the most current travel regulations or warnings? If so, visit TravelinOn.com, your one-stop shop for travel resources. At TravelinOn.com, that's TravelN-On.com, you can get the latest travel news and information and shop for all of your travel needs. TravelinOn.com is your premier source for all things travel. That's TravelN-On.com.
Every hour of every day, an American is diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. MS typically strikes between the ages of 16 and 50 when people are building careers and raising families. Today, there is no known cause or cure for MS. To learn more about this unpredictable disease, to volunteer, or to make a contribution to this important mission, please call 1-800-FIGHT-MS. You can make a difference by helping us stop this devastating disease. Please call 1-800-FIGHT-MS. Fight MS today. Thank you.